Over the last 4 weeks of worship, we've heard about the angels among us. Today, on this first Sunday after Christmas, we will conclude that series. Before we begin, however, I'd like to take a moment to thank Pastor Oak Young and for allowing me this opportunity to come before you and participate in this worship. At this time, I'd like to say how much it means to me to stand here before you, my church family, and connect with you in this way. Some of you are aware of my journey, but for those of you that aren't, I'd like to quickly say to you that over the past 3 years, I've been following my call through seminary at Pacific School of Religion. This month, I completed my graduate work in theological studies, and I'm looking forward to graduation this summer. And thanks to the support of the church and the staff parish relations committee, I'm currently a candidate for ordination as a deacon. Thank you. Thank you to each one of you for the words of encouragement and support that you've offered to me. It's meant a great deal to me. The season of Advent, as we've heard over the last month, is replete with angels and of all sorts. They've been encountered in both moments of consciousness and unconsciousness, but with everyone from the priesthood to the shepherd and both men and women. It even seems that angels transcend possible religious boundaries, as many religious scholars consider the Magi, who we heard about this morning through Bob's reading of Matthew 2, were in fact distinguished Gentile foreigners. These angelic sightings might also be interpreted as the ways in which God is actively engaged in his creation that unfolds throughout all history. Yet the Christmas story is so much more than the story of the angels, although their otherworldly presence sets the exalted key and tempo. Their inclusion immediately tells us that something mysterious can interrupt normal life and the flow of time, and it has. It is a story of making what would seem impossible possible, taking Elizabeth, a barren woman, and making her fertile, or even supernaturally expressed through Mary's virgin birth, transforming God's word to flesh. Some may rationally question, debate, or outrightly reject parts of this narrative, yet it is theologically foundational to the ways that we understand the Son of Man. He is not just some prophetic man, but as God incarnate of flesh and blood. There are many other ways that Jesus' birth and death are connected and even mirror one another. For the remainder of our time together today, I'd like to talk about the ways in which, in particular, the ways in which Jesus came into, lived, and left this world through unwavering humility and vulnerability. And it is that way in return that we are all called, ideally, to live our lives. Jesus' appearance could have taken many different shapes, and yet he came to us in the most vulnerable of all possible ways, through his birth as a defenseless baby who was totally reliant on Mary and Joseph. His very survival as an infant was accented by a level of malevolence from King Herod that would have him kill countless 2-year-old and younger boys in Nazareth. Jesus's birth into a modest family like Mary and Joseph's also made him much more vulnerable than if he had been born into a family of wealth or power. He entered and departed the world in a role that had all the appearances of powerlessness. As we consider the life of Jesus from birth to resurrection, we see a story that's uninterrupted vulnerability emerges. This might seem especially true when we consider the ways in which openness is inseparably connected and interdependently connected with love, compassion, and even humility. Humility, a term used with some regularity within the Gospels, is closely related to vulnerability, but has some important differences that we should not overlook. Humility, by definition, is a quality of or voluntary act of placing oneself below the station or position of another, and is the antithesis of powerfulness and arrogance. Jesus, for example, teaches us the value of humility through his acts of washing Peter's feet and allowing John the Baptist to baptize him. And while relating to either the humble or vulnerable person would be pleasurable, it is the latter, the vulnerable person, with their greater transparency that would make connection deeper and more intimate. According to Dr. Brené Brown, a mental health researcher and author, we as humans have brains that are wired for connection. It is one of the primary reasons that we are here and what gives us purpose in our lives, to be connected with one another. And yet, when we examine the ways in which we as a society live today, we find ourselves in a world that is highly individualistic. It is our culture that threatens shame onto men that are perceived as being too weak, or women unable to fulfill an unattainable list of expectations. How many of us might relate to those entrapments? Social pressures demand, for example, that our bodies look a certain way, that the cars that we drive have a certain emblem on them, and our children perform to some idealized standard. In the meantime, the internet lulls us into a sense of connection that is anything but. Our feelings of shame flowing from grief, disappointment, fear, and other anxieties can throw us into a flushing spiral of unworthiness. As a possible defense, a mind might create a narrative that says, I'm afraid of you. I'm afraid of you, that you will not approve of me. And so I busy myself, putting up sturdy armor around my heart, layer after layer after layer, to protect myself from whatever it is that you might think, long before I even know what that is. I might guess that at some time we can relate to this way of protecting ourselves. And as a strategy, if that doesn't work, we can attempt to cope in many different ways, seeking perfectionism, expressing foreboding joy, or just numbing out. And in so doing, have become a nation of growing intolerance and record levels of indebtedness, obesity, addiction, and medication usage. And while speaking of addiction in this context, we might acknowledge the way that in which the 12-step program, used in many addiction programs, encourages its members to be both vulnerable and humble through their declaration of powerlessness to their addiction. It is equally interesting to recognize the vital role that interpersonal connections plays in the lifelong recovery process, that vulnerability can tame shame and transform lives. Shame is the one emotion that most often inhibits us from the need for meaningful connection with others that we encounter. And as it turns out, vulnerability is the one trait that allows us to deeply connect with one another and to be truly worthy of appreciating one another. Only when we lower our emotional shields to fully expose our naked inner self can we fully see and be affirmed by others. Shame, according to Dr. Brown, invalidates us through silent whispers from our inner critic of, I'm bad, I'm not good enough, or who do you think you are? There is, however, a cultural myth that suggests that vulnerability is a weakness, which cheats us of those deep connections we long for. For those here that might think otherwise, I might invite you to consider the last time you saw someone being vulnerable and didn't think or feel that they were being courageous, open, or honest. Vulnerability is the place of many positive emotions, including love, belonging, joy, tenderness, empathy, and even traits like change, creativity, and innovation. In her book, Daring Greatly, Dr. Brown says, vulnerability sounds like truth and feels like courage. Truth and courage aren't always comfortable, but they're never weakness. From the time that I entered elementary school and until about 10 years ago, I shielded myself in every conceivable way to avoid exposing my own deepest and darkest vulnerabilities. I quickly learned in school that being different meant being exposed to criticism and bullying. And so I made myself into a chameleon and blended in the best that I could. It was a natural survival response, and it worked for the most part, barring some self-imposed solitary confinement-like isolation that left me generally safe but depressed. Every few years, I tentatively opened myself up ever so slightly, like gasping for a breath of air, and trying to discern what it was that laid hidden within me and that was so different. A decade would pass before I began to get an inkling of what I was shielding, not just from everyone else, but from myself as well. The growing realization that my sexual orientation was not just different, but apparently shameful, heightened my need to guard my secret. My official coming out process began unexpectedly some 10 years ago as I opened Pandora's box while exploring my gender identity. After realizing my true feelings of who I am, after nearly 50 years, it was too late. I could not bury that. Those feelings could not be returned to the box and protected despite the shame that was connected to them. Being invulnerable was quickly disappearing as an option. And despite superhuman attempts, my now true and full self could not be coerced into the life I had just occupied. The choice The choice to remain connected to life where I couldn't be my fully authentic self was not a choice. Ultimately, my world crumbled around me, and vulnerability that I had surrendered to brought me an amazing sense of liberation, peace, and joy. Grief and sadness for what was left behind looms in an immediate past. That same surrender also brought me ever closer to God while leading me to seminary, this church, and before you. My faith and trust in God's boundless grace and love has allowed me to greet each day, including this one, with openness and vulnerability that allows Him and His creation to work through me. Vulnerability opens life to transformation. In our day-to-day lives, each of us is likely to find it necessary and even desirable in certain circumstances to vulnerably open ourselves up in order to make our lives work for us. We might, for example, drive to and fro with a numbed awareness of the dangers that might befall us. We place our trust, the gateway to vulnerability, in our doctor's care for us and those that we love. And as a final example, we might consider how vulnerability we bring into our intimate relationships that without would be anything but. Most of us don't give any of those a second thought. And so I invite you to consider how you might more naturally be vulnerable to your neighbor and God's call to live life more deeply and fully. As I conclude, I'd like to once again return briefly to the vulnerability of Jesus, the Son of Man, demonstrated when he came to us. His vulnerability invited us to see the possibility of him and all his potentiality in us, and us and our humanity in him. This is the power of vulnerability in our life, and this is the way that we are called, you and I, as disciples of Christ, to walk among one another and the world. Thanks be to God.